The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And our first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter of February 2021. And it's entitled, Questions to Ask Before Getting a Hip Replacement. And it says, bring this article to your doctor appointment. You've run out of options for hip pain and you're facing a possible hip replacement. Once your doctor has determined that you're a good candidate for surgery, based on your medical history, images of your hip, steps you've taken to reduce pain, such as weight loss and low-impact exercise programs, and how pain has affected your daily function, you'll need to ask lots of questions. This is not a time to be shy. Be aggressive and get answers. The doctor expects that, says Dr. Scott Martin, an associate professor of orthopedic surgery at Harvard Medical School and medical editor of the Harvard Medical School guide, Total Hip Replacement. Here are some categories and questions to get you started. Your surgeon's expertise. Ask if your surgeon is board certified in orthopedic surgery, has had fellowship training, more training is better than less, and performs a lot of hip replacements. If they're primary joint surgeons, they should do hundreds of hip replacements per year, Dr. Martin advises. Minimizing risks. What will your doctor do to minimize the common risks of hip replacement? The main risks include a 10 to 15% chance for a blood clot and a 1% chance for either a heart attack during surgery or infection afterward. We try to get people up and walking as soon as possible, and we send 90 to 95% of people home the next day, as long as they have visiting nurses and physical therapy set up. That helps. We also prescribe a daily aspirin for 3 weeks to reduce blood clots, instead of a prescription blood thinner, which can cause bleeding, Dr. Martin says. Type of prosthetic. Get details about the type of artificial hip your surgeon wants to implant. The gold standard is a titanium cup with a high-density polyethylene plastic liner, a titanium stem, and a ball made of chrome, cobalt, and nickel, Dr. Martin says. Ceramic parts are good in younger people, but they tend to squeak and leave lots of debris if the ceramic cracks. Pain management. Ask how much pain you should anticipate. Don't let anyone kid you. It's a big incision. We're cutting bone, and you have to expect a certain amount of pain. But pain medications work well, Dr. Martin says. Find out about the type of pain medications your doctor will prescribe, too. Dr. Martin says prescription opioids like oxycodone are typically necessary for just a few days. After that, it's enough to alternate between acetaminophen or Tylenol and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or Advil. Preparing for surgery. Ask what you can do to get ready for surgery. I recommend a light strengthening program, which helps in recovery. And if you can lose weight, it will help your overall physical condition, Dr. Martin says. I also advise getting prepared mentally. Ask what you can expect each step of the way. Recovery is easier when you know what's going to happen. Surgical approach. There are several paths to get to the hip joint, through the front or anterior side, the lateral, or the back or posterior of the hip. Find out which approach your surgeon will use so you'll understand the overall plan. The article goes on to describe the anatomy of a hip replacement. The hip joint consists of a ball and socket. The ball is the top part of the thigh bone or femur. It angles inward and rests in the socket or acetabulum, which is part of your pelvis bone. As you age, cartilage that lines the socket and top of the femur tends to wear out. That leaves the bones to rub against each other as you move, causing pain. During hip replacement surgery, the surgeon removes the femoral head and neck of the thigh bone and replaces it with a metal or ceramic ball. The ball has a long stem that fits inside the femur. To replace the damaged socket, the surgeon scrapes away the old cartilage in the pelvis and installs a metal cup with a plastic liner. The surgeon may also use a bone glue to help keep the new parts in place. In certain people, healthy bone will very quickly grow into and tightly grasp the artificial ball and socket. And in that case, cement is unnecessary. Your return home. Well, before the hip surgery, ask if you'll need to make changes at home to accommodate your recovery. Dr. Martin recommends getting a raised toilet seat to make it easier to get up and down. You can find the seats at big box stores, pharmacies, and medical supply stores. Dr. Martin also advises that you have permanent grab bars installed in your shower and bathroom, and that you secure loose railings along staircases. It will also help to ask how long you can expect to have nurses and physical therapists coming to your home, how long your health insurance, usually Medicare, pays for them, and how much additional assistance from family you might need. You're also going to need to know about rehabilitation options. Will you need to spend any time at an inpatient facility? Will a physical therapist be coming to your home each week for a few months? Will you be going to outpatient physical therapy? And for how long? Ask your surgeon's office to coordinate these services. Getting back to your life. The whole point of hip replacement is to be able to move without pain and be active. So ask how long it should take to reach that stage. While the pain improves within a few days, returning to normal activity can take anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks, depending on your health and the activity, Dr. Martin says. Ask specifically about when you're likely to return to exercising, having sex, going to work, going to the store, and engaging in other activities that are important to you. Long-term results. Ask your surgeon how long you can expect your new hip to last. If you're 50 or older, we think you can get 20 to 25 years from a new joint, Dr. Martin says. But that can be affected by your health and your lifestyle. Try to get a good idea of what's ahead. Can you wait? A hip replacement is intimidating. It's okay to ask if you can put off surgery, especially during the pandemic. But don't wait too long. Some people are reluctant to consider surgery. They have a high pain tolerance and they're scared of surgery. But those are the people who decline faster physically and emotionally because they haven't treated the problem, Dr. Martin says. If you let us do a total hip replacement, you'll get your life back. The next article comes from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and this is from the March 2021 issue, and it's entitled Eye Emergencies. 1 minute you're ticking through the day's to-do list, The next, a burst of black dots appear in your field of vision, and your vision starts to blur at the edges. Panic sets in. Eye emergencies can be traumatic. Many involve injury from an accident. You're popping a champagne bottle, for example, or the grandkids get a hold of a bottle of cleaning solution. Others are the results of long-term developments related to internal disease. Many eye injuries can be prevented. Simple and common sense protective measures, such as wearing eye protection, will minimize your risk. If an emergency does happen, knowing how to respond can make a big difference in saving vision. Your eyes may seem delicate, but they're surprisingly resilient. Inside the eyes. The front part of your eyes, the white area, the sclera, the dark spot in the middle, the pupil, and the colored portion, the iris, absorb impact and are most visibly damaged in a traumatic or chemical eye injury. But injuries can affect any part of the eye, each of which plays a role in allowing sight. The first is the cornea. The cornea is a protective dome of clear tissue at the front of your eye. Its curved surface helps focus light rays before they're fine-tuned by the lens. The lens. The lens is a clear oval structure that sits behind the iris. The curvature of your lens changes to sharpen your focus. The vitreous cavity. The vitreous cavity extends from the back of the lens to the back of your eyeball, helping to maintain its shape. This area is filled with a clear, jelly-like substance called the vitreous. Structures at the back of your eye also play an important behind-the-scenes role in your vision, including the retina. The retina is a thin layer of tissue lining the back inner wall of your eyeball. It consists of millions of cells that capture the images focused onto them by your cornea and lens. When light hits these cells, electrical impulses are generated and carried to your optic nerve. The macula. The macula is a specialized part of the retina located in the center of the back of the eye. This patch of densely packed light-sensitive cells is essential to your central vision and allows you to see fine detail. Then there's the optic nerve. The optic nerve carries information gathered by your retina to your brain. Preventing problems. One common type of eye emergency, a retinal detachment, occurs when the retina painlessly pulls away from the wall of the eye, often suddenly and unexpectedly. It can be related to a tear developing in your retina due to either age or trauma, or it can be without an obvious cause. It can also be related to diseases like diabetes. Areas where the retina is detached can no longer receive the blood flow or nourishment they need, causing your vision to decrease. This requires emergency evaluation. While you may not be able to prevent a retinal detachment, it's recommended that you see your eye doctor regularly, especially if you're over 65 and have risk factors like advanced diabetes, high blood pressure, or inflammatory eye disease. Other common eye emergencies like accidental trauma from a flying object or chemical burns can happen by accident. Those accidents occur in workplaces, during leisure activity, and at home. Preventive measures include using a spatter shield when cooking bacon or other foods that emit flying oils and grease from the pan. keeping all chemicals such as cleaners and bleach out of the reach of children. Never mix chemicals. Use only as directed while wearing protective safety glasses. Always wash your hands immediately after use to keep from rubbing the chemical into your eyes. Wear protective safety glasses when using a hammer or power tools, like a saw or drill. Keep your distance at all times from others using tools to avoid flying debris. And opening corked bottles like champagne outside and point them away from you and all others. The article goes on to describe removing a foreign object from your eye. Clearing your own eye. If it's a minor issue, like a small particle of dust, blinking several times may remove the particle. If that doesn't work, try to flush the object with clean, warm water or a saline solution. Use an eye cup or small clean glass. Position the eye with its rim resting on the bone at the base of your eye socket and pour the fluid in, keeping the eye open. Take note, whether cleaning your own eye or someone else's, if the object is large, making closing the eye difficult, is made of something sharp, like a metal or glass, can't be flushed out, or is embedded in the eyeball, do not touch or rub your eye. Cover it with a paper cup taped to the face and forehead and seek emergency care immediately. What should you do to clear someone else's eye? Well, you should wash your hands, then seat the person in a well-lighted area. Examine the eye to find the object. Gently pull the lower lid down and ask the person to look up. Then hold the upper lid while the person looks down. If the object is floating in the tear film or on the surface of the eye, try using eye drops to flush it out, or irrigate the eye as was previously described. The article then goes on to describe some other things to do to protect your eye. Always wear protective safety glasses when using power equipment outside, including lawnmowers, edgers, chainsaws, and clipping shears. All of these can send debris flying at high speeds. Keep bungee cords at arm's length away from your body. They're a common cause of eye injuries from snapping. Supervise children's use of sharp objects like pens, scissors, forks, and knives. Overall, you should stay calm and have a plan. If an eye emergency happens to you or someone in your vicinity, it's important to remain calm and know how to respond until you get medical care. Every situation is different, but mild corneal abrasion, like from a baby or dog scratch, and small amounts of dirt or sand in the eye usually do not require emergency medical care, but should still be evaluated, particularly if irritation persists. In general, any sudden loss of vision, whether partial or full, whether in one or both eyes, whether painful or painless, indicates a need for urgent evaluation by an eye doctor. In some cases, vision loss may be accompanied by other signs and symptoms, like nausea, vomiting, swelling or redness, and inflammation around the eye, or fevers. The article then goes on to print a table which describes a variety of eye emergencies. The first one is posterior vitreous detachment, retinal tear, or other retinal pathology. And it says that the signs and symptoms of this are in one or both eyes, sudden visual appearance of many floaters, perhaps like a shower of dots or a swarm of bees, flashes of light, blurring of peripheral vision, and a curtain over part of the vision. And, of course, common sense would tell you that what you should do is to seek urgent medical care, including care from an eye doctor. If the eye emergency is a chemical splash in the eye, you may experience stinging, burning, redness, pain, blurry vision, and swollen eyelids. If this happens, you should flush your eye with water and seek immediate medical care. Don't wipe or rub your eye. If possible, take a picture of the product label so the doctors know the chemicals that make up the liquid. Cut or punctured eye. If this happens, you may experience bleeding, discoloration of the sclera, sharp pain, unusual pupil size, one eye sticking out farther than the other. And of course, you should seek immediate medical care. Place a protective shield, like the end of a clean paper cup, over the affected eye. Don't touch the eye. Don't wash the eye with water or other liquid. And don't take aspirin, ibuprofen, or other pain relievers, as they may worsen bleeding. If there's a blow to your eye socket, like being punched or struck by a baseball, you may experience swelling and discoloration around the eye, pain, dizziness, and blurred vision. If this happens, apply a sterile cold compress to ease pain and swelling. Don't use frozen vegetables or steak, as they can cause infection. And you should seek immediate medical care. Finally, the article goes on to describe health tips, and the heading is Subtle Signs of Stroke. You may know the classic signs and symptoms of a stroke: face drooping, arm or leg weakness, speech difficulties, impaired vision and dizziness, and loss of coordination. But there are other early warning signs that you probably don't associate with stroke, according to the American Heart Association. What early symptoms have in common is that they occur suddenly and often can't be explained by other possible causes. They include headaches, especially if they're unusually severe, difficulty walking, exhaustion or general weakness, fuzzy thinking or confusion, and nausea, vomiting, or trouble swallowing, especially if there is no accompanying illness. If you experience sudden occurrence of those symptoms without any other explanation, seek immediate medical care, especially if you fall in a high-risk category for stroke, such as people with high blood pressure, the heart rhythm disorder atrial fibrillation, diabetes, or heart disease, or a personal or family history of stroke. Additional high-risk groups include adults 55 or older, African Americans, and women taking estrogen-containing birth control pills or hormone therapy. Overall, men are more likely than women to have a stroke, but women are more likely to show more subtle signs and symptoms. Of course, it's possible that you're not having a stroke and it's a false alarm, but you should play it safe and get an immediate evaluation. If it's a stroke, the longer it takes to receive care and treatment, the higher the risk of disability or death. Every minute counts in stemming irreversible brain injury. The next subject that the Mayo Clinic Health Letter delves into is testosterone use. And it starts with a subheading, Older Men, Testosterone is Not a Cure-All. You may have heard that testosterone therapy is helpful for many older men, since testosterone levels fall with age. It's true that testosterone levels decline naturally after peaking in adolescence and early adulthood, but Mayo Clinic experts say that this natural decline does not lead to clinically significant hypogonadism that would require treatment in most men. There's some controversy as to whether testosterone therapy might improve sexual function somewhat in men who have had their testosterone decline with age. But medical experts agree that testosterone is not a miracle drug that will cure your aging-related problems. The Food and Drug Administration has only approved testosterone therapy for low testosterone with a clear medical cause. Keep in mind that some of the signs and symptoms of low testosterone can also be caused by other problems, like poor sleep, medication side effects, thyroid disorders, depression, or diabetes. It's important to address these issues and remember that healthy eating and daily physical activity can help boost your energy as well as your mood. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.